Okay, now we're gonna do something a little bit different. We're going off-piste. Ready?
Yeah, very much so this morning. We're on a quest to solve one of history's greatest mysteries.
A city of dreams. Incredible architecture. A massive navy. Then, without warning, it literally vanishes overnight. An extraordinary civilization lost forever.
We're talking, of course, the lost city of Atlantis. It's a watery world that continues to intrigue. Some even go so far as to search for this fabled lost world. What's fact? What's myth about this enduring legend? Mark Adams is the New York Times best-selling author of Turn Right at Machu Picchu. Next stop? Well, yes, you guessed it, his new book, Meet Me in Atlantis. He joins me now via Skype. Mark, welcome.
Thanks, Jonathan. Good to be here.
Now, you make a clean breast of things in the subtitle of this work, My Obsessive Quest to Find the Sunken City.
Well, it's a little misleading in that my obsessive quest is actually to go and speak to all of the most obsessive people who are searching for the sunken city.
Did you find a common thread there?
Well, I did. You know, they're all sort of these very normal people with everyday jobs, like pediatrician or information technology specialist or something like that. And in their spare time, they are you know, absolutely fixated on the idea that they can use these sort of very specific clues that Plato gave in the Atlantis story to basically follow them like GPS coordinates and track down the lost city.
So your relationship with Atlantis was somewhat more platonic.
Well, so to speak, it started very skeptical. You know, I come from a journalism background, and, you know, I was interested in the sort of collision between the two worlds of Plato, the you know, Western civilization's greatest thinker, and, you know, Atlantis, which usually is categorized with, you know, Bigfoot and UFOs and crop circles and things like that. Mm. The one had completely come out of the other was fascinating to me. So, but, you know, once I started talking to these people, they're all really convincing. And, you know, having spent a lot of time in the Mediterranean and looking at these sites and hearing these hypotheses again and again, but halfway through my reporting, I sort of involuntarily found myself cheering for these guys to actually find something that would match up with Atlantis.
Tell us about Plato and Atlantis.
Well, it's very interesting. You know, Plato, of course, is the great philosopher, 4th century BC, Athens. The story he writes about Atlantis, it comes in two parts, and the first part comes in a very odd spot. It comes after the end of the Republic, arguably the most influential work in Western civilization, and before a dialogue that's called the Timaeus, which is sort of Plato's attempt to give a mathematical logic to the cosmos. So, you know, obviously a pretty major undertaking, hugely influential on monotheistic religion and astrophysics and various other things. In between those two, he introduces the story of Atlantis. So it's a very odd place to put this strange tale about this city that sank beneath the waves.
What's his intention there, do you think?
Oh, I think he's up to a few different things, one of which is he knows he's dealing with some pretty thick subjects here. You know, Plato is the founder of the first university in Athens called the Academy, and I think he's probably using these dialogues to teach, and I think he's using this Atlantis story as a way to draw people into the practice of, you know, philosophy and questioning things. And, you know, obviously it's a good story because we're still talking about it 2,400 years later.
Mark Adams is the author of Meet Me in Atlantis. Why does it appeal, Mark?
You know, I think it's two things, and it captivates two different audiences. You've got these, what I call the Atlantologists, who are these people who are actively trying to find Atlantis. And I think for those people, it's the greatest mystery of antiquity, and they want to be the one to solve it. For most people, you know, the millions and millions of people who, you know, perhaps they come to Atlantis through a slightly more New Agey perspective, I think for those people, Atlantis is just sort of a blank screen onto which they project their desires. You know, if they want it to be an ancient, peaceful race from which, you know, all great things originally came, that's what it's going to be to them. And because we have no physical evidence of Atlantis, just Plato's words, you know, nobody can say to them, you're wrong and I can prove it. You know, nobody can say I'm right and I can prove it either. But that's the enticing thing about Atlantis. Because it's so vague, we can make it whatever we want it to be.
It makes it a very useful concept. And well, not a nasty one either. It's not a bad thing to project those things onto a place of mystery.
And it's good to have a little mystery in the world. Mm. You know, I mean, one of the guys who I spoke with for this book, he tried to use, you know, sort of an algorithm and to get, you know, weigh each of Plato's criteria for where Atlantis might be. And, you know, he's like, you know, X, Y squared minus blah, blah, blah. And he showed me all the math and it completely went over my head. But he said, you know, I can prove with 99.999% accuracy that it was on, you know, the Atlantic coast of Morocco. And I'm like, you know, Michael, his name was Michael Huber, you can't prove that. You know, this is all very, you know, slippery stuff here. This is stuff that needs to be interpreted. These are not hard facts. And that's a good thing. I think Plato would be fine with that. He would say, you know, look, there are things that we are not going to understand in this world. And that's just the way it is.
I suspect Plato would be pleased as punch that this persists.
Oh, I think he would be absolutely delighted to know that people were debating, because, you know, this is a moment in history where, you know, Plato is grappling with a new technology, and that is written history. You know, Herodotus had come along less than 100 years earlier. Before that, all of the stories that had been passed down, the legends and history and such, came in the form of oral histories and myth, things like Homer's Iliad and Odyssey. You know, he's not sure he's cool with this whole writing history down thing. You know, Socrates gets all the best lines in Plato's dialogues, and Socrates comes down pretty hard saying, look, if we can't argue about something, if we can't engage with something verbally, it's probably not what we can really call true. So I think Plato would be absolutely delighted that 2,400 years later we're still arguing about Atlantis.
And what does that more recent development, post-history of scientific method, what does that say about Atlantis?
Well, it's interesting. It seems to show that there may be, and you know, that's the caveat with all this stuff, there may be connections with things like ancient catastrophes, because that's one of the things Plato talks about in the Atlantis story. He says, you know, look, this was the third great flood before Deucalion. Deucalion is a flood story from Greek mythology that is very, very similar to the story of Noah's Ark. It's very similar to the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's very similar to the story of Manu. You know, all these cultures from around the Mediterranean and Indian Ocean seem to have these flood myths that have very similar components. So you start to wonder, you know, are all of these coming from a single source? And if that's the case, is the single source a story, or is the single source some sort of event? And then, you know, then if you can match up the geological record with the myth, and this has been done with things like the Thera volcanic explosion around 1600 in the Greek Isles, has been matched up with some ancient poetry by Hesiod, who lived around 700 BC. You know, if you can start to do things like that, you know, then we can start to search for that kernel of truth buried in the Atlantis story.
So, Mark Adams, before and after Meet Me in Atlantis, how did your view of this change, and where are you post-book?
Well, you know, when I started, I was mostly interested in finding out why people would look for Atlantis. And I think my bias in there was the assumption that many people have, certainly most academics have, that Atlantis was just some fairy tale, you know, some pot of gold at the end of a rainbow. At the end, though, I'm pretty sure that there is a good chunk of truth in the story, and that Plato believed that parts of the story were definitely true, were definitely grounded in history. And I think if we could find the three concentric circles that Plato says served as the sort of base of the capital of Atlantis, of concentric circles of land and water, and if we could find some sort of inscription in a hieroglyph in Egypt, which is where he says the original story came from. If we could find those two things and match them up, I think we would have a pretty solid case that there really had been some sort of Atlantis at some point, and that's what inspired Plato's story.
There's the dream. Mark, thank you so much. A fascinating account. Maybe we should just rebuild it on dry land.
Yeah, this is usually where some jokester comes in with, well, you know, they already built it in the Bahamas.
Mark Adams, thank you. Mark Adams is author of Meet Me in Atlantis, My Obsessive Quest to Find the Sunken City, available in this country through Text Publishing.